Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're here to synthesize complex research, and today, well, we're tackling the very foundations of life itself. We're diving into an amazing lecture by Dr. Ty C.M. Hoffman all about the earliest life forms, the prokaryotes.
That's right. And Dr. Hoffman started with a perspective shift that's just staggering.
The scale, yeah. We think of ourselves, our 100 trillion human cells.
Exactly. But Dr. Hoffman pointed out, for every one of your cells, there are maybe 10, maybe even 100 bacteria living on you, in you.
So numerically speaking, you are mostly bacteria.
It really flips the script on what an individual organism is, doesn't it? And to get there, we have to ask, what's the bare minimum for life? Dr. Hoffman says it's one cell, the functional unit.
Okay. And we're talking about the first successful cells here, prokaryotes.
The pioneers. They ran the planet for billions of years before anything like us showed up.
So let's trace that journey. Dr. Hoffman took us way, way back, before life.
Mm-hmm. Almost a billion years before organisms existed, to the Hadean eon.
Which sounds pretty intense.
Oh, it was. Dr. Hoffman described it as hellishly hot. Life, as we know it, couldn't survive. Just chemical evolution happening then.
But eventually, life did get started. We have proof, right? Fossils.
Yeah, the oldest ones we know of are stromatolites. They date back at least 3.5 billion years.
And these aren't dinosaur bones, obviously. What are they exactly?
They look like layered rocks, but they're actually fossilized mats. Colonies of those early prokaryotic cells all layered together. Amazing evidence.
Okay, so life happened, but how? You need ingredients first, the building blocks.
Exactly. Dr. Hoffman laid out the four must-haves. Lipids, polysaccharides, those are the big carbs, proteins, and nucleic acids. Every single organism needs all four.
And the big problem used to be thinking that only living things could make these organic molecules.
Right, that was the dogma for ages. But then came the experiments, like the Miller-Urey type experiments and the redos Dr. Hoffman mentioned. They simulated early Earth conditions, the heat, oceans, lightning, that kind of stuff. And they showed that inorganic stuff, simple molecules, could spontaneously form organic compounds, amino acids, for instance, more than the 20 we even use today.
Wow. Okay, so the building blocks could form on their own, but you need to keep them together. You need a container.
That's where lipids come in. Specifically, phospholipids. Dr. Hoffman stressed this term, amphipathic.
Amphipathic, meaning dual nature.
Exactly. Part of the molecule loves water, that's the polar head, and part hates it, the non-polar tails.
And that's the key.
It's the whole key to getting a cell started. Put those phospholipids in water and they automatically arrange themselves.
How so?
The tails hide from the water and the heads face it. They form a double layer, a phospholipid bilayer that naturally curves into a sphere, a vesicle, a tiny bag.
Just like that, spontaneously.
Pretty much. And Dr. Hoffman pointed out that volcanic clay on early Earth could have acted as a catalyst, speeding this whole process up, helping these pre-cell structures form.
Incredible. Okay, so we have the basic structure. Now, the prokaryotes themselves, bacteria and archaea.
Yep. Dr. Hoffman called them the original and still the most successful cell types. Why? Because they're ubiquitous.
Meaning?
They're everywhere.
Everywhere. Every environment you can think of in the biosphere, they're there.
Structurally, though, they're simpler than our cells, right? Eukaryotic cells.
Much simpler on the inside. We have all these membrane-bound compartments, organelles, like the nucleus, mitochondria. Prokaryotes don't have those.
Just the outer plasma membrane?
That's it. Their whole interior is just cytoplasm, contained by that one membrane.
But wait, Dr. Hoffman mentioned they can still do really complex things, like photosynthesis or respiration, even without the specialized organelles. How?
Ah, this is the clever part. That single plasma membrane, it's not just a simple bag. In many prokaryotes, it's elaborately folded.
Folded inwards.
Yeah, folded back and forth into the cytoplasm. It massively increases the surface area inside the cell.
Okay, like packing more workspace into a small room? Exactly. It creates a setup that's functionally very similar to the internal membranes of our mitochondria or chloroplasts. So they can do that complex energy processing. It's an amazing bit of natural engineering.
Very cool. What about the outside? How do they interact with the world, sticking to things, moving around?
Good questions. Dr. Hoffman covered a few key structures. For sticking, there's often a capsule.
A capsule, like a sticky coat.
Pretty much. A layer of polysaccharides outside the cell wall helps them stick to surfaces, like, say, your tonsil cells.
Uh-oh. And there were others.
Yep. Fimbriae. Think of them like little protein bristles or hairs.
Yeah.
Also for sticking firmly in place.
Okay, sticking. Capsule, fimbriae. What about movement?
For movement, the star is the flagella. But Dr. Hoffman was really clear on how these work.
Yeah, like a whip.
No, not like a eukaryotic flagellum that whips back and forth. Prokaryotic flagella are helical, like a corkscrew, and they spin.
They spin like a propeller.
Exactly, true propeller motion. And get this, the motor that spins them uses ATT, but it's basically the ATP synthesis machine, the one that usually makes ATP running in reverse.
Wow, so it uses the cell's energy generator as a motor. That's incredibly efficient.
It really is. And that efficiency, that ingenuity, leads to what Dr. Hoffman called their real claim to fame, not their shapes, which are relatively simple.
But their biochemical versatility.
Bingo. He said they can perform essentially all of biochemistry. That's their superpower.
What does that mean in practice? All of biochemistry.
Think about how organisms get energy and carbon. Energy comes from light or chemicals. Carbon comes from inorganic CO2 or organic compounds made by others.
Okay, light chemical, inorganic,
That
organic.
gives you four basic nutritional modes: photoautotroph, light energy, CO2, carbon;
Yep.
chemoautotroph, chemical energy, CO2, carbon; photoheterotrophs, light energy, organic carbon; and chemoheterotroph, chemical energy, organic carbon.
And we're chemoheterotrophs, right? We eat chemicals for energy and carbon.
We are. Now, here's the kicker Dr. Hoffman highlighted. Prokaryotes are the only group of organisms that can do all four of those modes, including the really weird one, photoheterotroph.
Nobody else can do all four.
Nope. That biochemical flexibility is why they can live literally anywhere. They can adapt their metabolism to whatever resources are available.
And this versatility didn't just let them survive, it changed the planet.
Massively. Dr. Hoffman stressed this. Prokaryotes invented photosynthesis, the kind that releases oxygen.
And that oxygen built up.
Slowly, over billions of years, it changed the atmosphere, which was actually toxic to a lot of early life.
The oxygen catastrophe.
Right. But it also created a huge opportunity. That oxygen allowed a much more efficient energy process to evolve, cellular respiration.
Because oxygen is the perfect, what was the term?
The final electron acceptor. Think of energy release like electrons rolling downhill. Oxygen provides the steepest hill, the biggest energy drop. Respiration harvests way more energy than earlier metabolisms.
And other bacteria evolved to use it long before eukaryotes even existed.
Exactly, setting the stage for all complex life.
Okay, so they're ancient, versatile, world-changing. How do they keep adapting so well today? We adapt slowly through generations. Vertical gene transfer.
Ah, but prokaryotes have another trick. Horizontal gene transfer. Moving DNA between cells, not just from parent to offspring.
Sideways, between neighbors, basically.
Kinda, yeah. Dr. Hoffman outlined three main ways they do this. First is transformation.
Transformation.
That's when a bacterium just picks up naked DNA from the environment, maybe from a cell that died and burst open. It can just slurp up those DNA
They
fragments
can use them.
and potentially incorporate those genes into its own chromosome. Instant new trait.
Okay, that's wild. What's next?
Transduction. This one involves a middleman, a virus.
Yeah.
Specifically, a bacteriophage, a virus that infects bacteria.
A bacteria eater.
Right. Normally, the virus injects its DNA to make more viruses. But sometimes, during that process, a piece of the bacterium's DNA gets accidentally packaged into a new virus particle. Then that virus infects another bacterium, but instead of viral DNA, it injects a piece of the previous bacterium's DNA. Transfer complete.
Wow, accidental gene delivery by virus. Okay, number three.
Conjugation. This is the most direct. Two bacteria physically connect.
They touch.
Yep. Often using a structure called a sex pilus to form a little tunnel between them. Dr. Hoffman called it a mating bridge or conjugation tube.
And they pass DNA through this bridge.
Exactly. But usually not their main chromosome. They pass a plasmid.
A plasmid. That's a small extra loop of DNA, right?
Perfect. Small, circular, carries non-essential genes. Often, crucially, the genes for building the mating bridge itself.
So the plasmid carries the instructions for its own transmission. Clever.
Very. It allows useful traits like antibiotic resistance to spread incredibly quickly through a bacterial population.
And Dr. Hoffman tied this back to something fundamental. The reason a bacterium can use DNA from another bacterium, or even from us.
Yes. The universality of the genetic code. The DNA language, the codons that specify amino acids, is basically the same across all life.
So a gene from a human can be read and understood by a bacterium.
Precisely. It's profound evidence for a single common ancestor for all life on Earth.
Speaking of ancestry, let's talk domains. We have bacteria, archaea, and eukarya. That's us. Bacteria and archaea look similar, both prokaryotes.
But the genetics tell a different story. Dr. Hoffman clarified this. The phylogenetic tree, the tree of life, shows that Archaea and Yukari are actually more closely related to each other.
Really? So we're closer cousins to Archaea than Archaea are to bacteria?
That's what the molecular evidence strongly suggests. Bacteria are the more ancient, separate lineage.
And Archaea have this reputation, right, for living in crazy places.
Oh, yeah. They are the masters of extreme environments. Extremophiles. Lovers of extremes.
Like what?
Dr. Hoffman gave examples like thermophiles, heat lovers, thriving in boiling water, like Yellowstone hot springs, where temperatures would instantly cook the proteins of most organisms.
How do they even do that?
Their proteins, their enzymes, their cell membranes are just built differently, adapted to withstand that heat. Then you have halophiles.
Halo. Salt.
Salt lovers.
Mm-hmm.
Living in places like the Dead Sea or salt flats with incredibly high salt concentrations that would dehydrate most cells.
And those deep sea vents, too.
Absolutely. Chimototrophs living near hydrothermal vents in total darkness, using chemicals from the vent as their energy source. They form the base of an entire ecosystem down there, supporting things like giant tube worms.
It's just incredible the range they cover. But they're not all exotic, right? They play roles closer to home.
Definitely. Dr. Hoffman mentioned nutrient cycling. Bacteria and archaea in the soil are essential decomposers. They break down dead stuff and release vital nutrients, like potassium or nitrogen, making them available for plants. Without them, ecosystems would collapse.
And symbiosis, living together.
Tons of examples. Dr. Hoffman's cool one was the headlight fish. It has pouches under its eyes filled with bioluminescent bacteria.
Bacteria that glow.
Yep. The fish provides them a home and nutrients, and they provide the fish with light, a type of endosymbiosis, one living inside the other.
Of course, it's not always friendly. Bacteria cause diseases.
They certainly do. Lyme disease, strep throat, food poisoning, lots of bacterial pathogens. Interestingly, Dr. Hoffman noted that archaea are not currently known to cause any human diseases.
That is interesting. Okay, so they cycle nutrients, live with us, sometimes badly, live inside other animals. What about direct uses? Dr. Hoffman finished with some really important applications.
Yes, biotechnology and bioremediation. Leveraging that amazing biochemical versatility.
Biotechnology, like using them as little factories.
Exactly. Take human insulin. We can take the human gene for insulin, insert it into a bacterial plasmid using genetic engineering techniques.
Put that plasmid into bacteria.
And the bacteria, using their own cellular machinery and that universal genetic code, will read the human gene and produce pure human insulin. Much better than the pig insulin used historically.
Amazing. And they can make other things too, like plastics.
Yeah, some bacteria naturally produce biodegradable plastics. We can harness that, engineer them to produce more, offering sustainable alternatives.
Okay, that's biotech. What about bioremediation?
That's using prokaryotes, mostly bacteria, to clean up our messes. Environmental pollution.
Like oil spills.
Oil spills are a classic example. Some bacteria have evolved the ability to metabolize components of crude oil, basically eat it.
Seriously?
Yep. They break down those complex, toxic hydrocarbons into simpler, harmless things like CO2 and water. So we can sometimes enhance the growth of these specific bacteria as spill sites to accelerate the cleanup. They're nature's recyclers.
From the dawn of life on a hellish earth to cleaning up 21st century pollution, that's quite a story for such tiny organisms.
It really is. The scope Dr. Hoffman covered was immense.
And it all seems to circle back to that core idea you mentioned earlier.
The universality of the genetic code.
Yeah. The fact that life's fundamental operating system works across bacteria, archaea, humans.
Yeah.
Everything.
It's maybe the most profound concept Dr. Hoffman touched on. Think about it. That bacterium reading a human gene. That archaeon thriving in boiling acid, us having this conversation. Despite the mind-boggling diversity of life shaped by 3.5 billion years of evolution, that core language, the way DNA is translated into proteins, hasn't fundamentally changed.
What does that tell us?
It tells us how deeply connected we all are, how every living thing traces back to that successful lineage that started it all. That shared heritage is written into the very code of our cells.
Something to definitely ponder. How linked we still are to those first prokaryotic cells. That's our deep dive for today. Thanks for joining us.